Well, hello again, dear listener and dear reader, and welcome to episode 3 of the Handsome Timmy D Express. Once again, thanks everybody listening to the interviews with DJ Matt the Cat and self-published author Megan Karish, and sitcom writers Megan Karish, I should say. The interviews are still up there on the site below. I'm very excited here to have a, you know, I went to Emerson College with this guest, and I think Emerson has one of the best television training grounds out there, and my guest today, Mike Dotto, is living proof of that. His resume is long and extensive, starting from as a stage PA on That 70s Show way back when. He's worked his way up to assistant director. He's directed his own shorts, one of which starring Kurtwood Smith, another which, for you comic book fans out there, would be one of the greatest things you ever saw. He's worked in post-production, he's worked in design, and today he has taken time out of his very busy schedule as the digital media producer over at TV Land to talk to us about creativity and making television. Mike Dotto, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Tim?
Did I leave anything out? You got a lot of stuff to cover there in your...
Yeah, I think you pretty much covered it.
Okay, well, cool. Okay, cool. I'm also feeling the pressure, though, because one of Mike's duties as digital media producer, we'll get in on that, but one of his duties is actually to interview the stars of some of the shows on Hot in Cleveland. For example, he just interviewed, I'm going to say the name wrong, Dan Lauria from The Wonder Years, in addition to all the other top talent. So I know that if I screw this interview up, I mean, I'm dealing with a real pro here as somebody who's interviewing, so hopefully I won't screw this up too much.
Now I'm feeling the pressure.
Absolutely. This better be fascinating. So, one of the things I want to talk to you about is we talked a little bit off camera about how you started as a stage PA and then worked your way up to an assistant director. I think a lot of people who are not in the business or in television, and why would they know, sometimes think that an assistant director is an assistant to the director, that you do his laundry, get his coffee, and keep his schedule. But that's actually not true. An assistant director is one of the most vital positions on a television set or on a movie set. And could you tell us more about that and some of your experiences?
Right. Well, the assistant director, you're basically part of a team. They call it the director. And while the director is in charge of all of the creative decisions as far as what goes on blocking-wise and cameras and everything from set design to costumes, the assistant director's there to keep everything else on the stage or on the set running. So if any crew members have questions, we're constantly working with the department heads, just making sure that the ship just keeps going while they do his thing. So we very much work as a team. And then a lot of times, when I assistant direct, I'm also, blocking all of the talent, all of the background talent, any of the actors who don't have lines and things like that. So, you know, kind of what's going on, behind the main action. But working closely with the director doing that, which is a lot of fun.
Well, sure, because I think people are often under the misconception that the director designs, and I'm not trying to take away from the director's job, believe me, because we're going to talk about you as a director, but the director designs like everything in the frame, and that's absolutely not true. The director, he or she, truly does rely on people like you, and it's very important, I imagine, for that team to be keeping the director's vision intact.
Right. Well, you know, every department head is really in charge of their own input, basically, into what goes on in the shot. I mean, the director has the ultimate say, but, you know, the prop guys are designing props how they see, you know, these props to be, and making sure they work properly, and the set designers have a lot of input in, you know, how the set looks, and you know, ultimately the director has the final say, but you know, everybody has their creative input, and you know, it's really that everyone is on the same page. So that's kind of where the assistant directors come in, is you know, making sure that every single department head knows exactly what's going on in every scene and what needs to be done, so the director doesn't have to worry about that.
If an assistant director doesn't do his or her job right, how in trouble is that production? I mean, it sounds like you guys are very much like the chain and the foundation holding the house up.
You know, I think the directing team is really, you know, keeping everything running. Yeah. So if you know, it's basically going to be stopping the train.
Yeah.
If somebody doesn't know what they're doing. So it's very important. And that's why, I work, I'm part of the Directors Guild, and, you know, there's a guild for a reason. You know, you have to go through training. You have to know what you're doing at all times. And that's why almost all of the shows on television are DGA shows, because mm-hmm. they need that. They need the directors and the ADs who really know how to run things. Otherwise, you're going to lose money.
Yep.
You know, shoots are going to go longer. There's going to be mistakes. So, very important.
Do you think that spawns another question? It's a good point. Like, I know that I'm pretty sure not all directors, be it sitcom, drama, what have you, have to become ADs first. But do you think it's a good idea to go through the process of being an AD before becoming a full-fledged director?
Well, I don't think it is necessary,
mm-hmm.
but I do think it does help.
Hmm.
Having been an AD, especially if you're doing your own production, you kind of know how that day is going to run, and you can really your own film very well, because you pretty much know down to a half an hour, what that day is going to look like. I think it's really important especially if you're going to produce your own thing. But then, you know, the other skills involved with it are, you know, talking to a crew, managing a crew, that's imperative as a director. You have to know how to talk to your crew and how to get what you want from them. That's where also being an AD helps immensely.
When stuff goes wrong, because invariably in production something is going to go wrong, a lamp's going to fall over, even a lead getting sick, or just, you know, the set falls down, what have you. It happens in life. I mean, how important is it, or is the director team, are they the ones that actually are in charge of sort of keeping the cool on the set and being the ones that are coming up with the solutions and kind of telling everybody else, listen, don't panic. You know, this happened, but there's a plan B and a plan C, and this is what we're going to do.
Exactly. I mean, there's always chaos. There's always things that are going to go wrong. There's too many components, you know, mm-hmm. when you're doing a show or you're doing a movie. Things are going to happen. That's the way it is. And so you need to make sure that you're maximizing your time on set as best you can. So, you know, if a camera goes down, there's something else you can shoot with one camera, or mm-hmm. there's, you know, other parts of that you can get done in time, because you have to keep things going. Because time is definitely money when you're on set. So making sure that everyone is calm is essential. If there's panic on set, if people are panicking that they're not getting what they need, the whole thing could shut down.
Yeah.
So it's, but you plan for that. You go in knowing that not everything is going to work. And you try and plan to put out those fires before they start. or you know, you have a plan for how to put them out once they do. So
yeah, I've done most of my career, as you know, I've been in post-production, and whenever I go out to the field, I'm always shocked when I leave the comfort of the Avid Bay and I go out in the field and I see. I mean, it's really stunning just how much goes wrong before breakfast. And it's almost like, you know, you got to laugh. And like you say, you got to just plan and roll with it. And you can't get upset because you just know it's going to happen. You wake up, you get out of bed, and you're like, well, I wonder what is going to hit the fan today. And hopefully your plans and work will take care of that. That's also a good segue into, now you were a director of two short features. I'm not a trained interviewer, Mike. You were a director of two shorts, links of which are below, dear listener. Highly recommend everybody checks them out. They're really, truly well done. I'm not just saying that because you're a friend of mine. Tell me about directing for the first time. And again, you were directing established actors from That 70s Show. This was a very, you know, this is a very high-end type production, and at least you were trying to make it so. Tell me about those first experiences as a director.
Well, I had come in quite prepared, mm-hmm. You know, going into doing Peace, which is the short you're talking about with Kurtwood Smith. You know, was from my experience being on set every day on That 70s Show. You know, I was fortunate enough to work with David Trainer, who was the director on every episode of 70s Show. And from the first day, he actually came up to me and asked me what I want to do. And I said, I want to direct. And he took me under his wing from that moment. And really showed me everything that he does, from, you know, how he works with the actors and how he works with the writers to, you know, blocking for cameras an experience I'll never forget. And that really prepared me, you know, for my first short. It was really, going into that, I had all the confidence in the world working with established actors and working with an established crew, because, you know, I had that experience. Even though I wasn't directing 70s Show, I was basically the lowest man on the totem pole on stage, but I was never treated that way. We were really a family I really learned not only from David, but from that company, how you treat people, you know, and how you can get the most out of really talented individuals, because everyone was treated with respect, myself included. And when you have that on a set, I think that's probably one of the most important things, is you just need to have that where you can rely on each other and you respect what everyone does creatively. I also went into that knowing that I didn't know everything, and then that was okay. I think that sometimes when you do a first film, you think you have to have all the answers, and you really don't. Like, it's better, I feel, listen, you know, there are talented people around you and you should listen to them. And, you know, if they have a better idea than you, you're wise to take that, because that's a gift. You know, it doesn't all have to come from you. You don't have to have all the answers. That's another thing that I learned, and it takes the pressure off quite a bit, and you ultimately end up with a better product.
And I imagine your crew is going to respect and enjoy being around you more because they're feeling validated. They know their creativity is coming to life. They could come to you with ideas and say, hey, I think we should try this and that. It would work. And you're not going to say to them, hey, listen, pal, I'm the director. You just go over there in the corner, which unfortunately there are some people out there like that.
Right.
But Mike, I'm so glad you just brought up two really great points I want to emphasize in that last answer, which are, I think, vital lessons. And anybody who's listening to this, who's thinking about getting entertainment or is sort of kind of struggling in entertainment or just starting off in it, you said two very, very important things that I don't think are emphasized enough. And I'm saying that, and I'm not trying to be a jerk by saying this, but I've seen people not do this, and it's hurt their careers. One is, if you don't tell anybody, they won't know. Meaning, if somebody, you know, you were lucky enough that Mr. Trainer asked you, but listen, if you're a PA and you want to be a director, tell people. I'd like to be a director one day. Because if you're smart and you show promise and you're efficient and professional, people will train you. We all want good professionals out there. We may be working for you one day. So don't keep it a secret. Nobody's going to walk on set, look at the kids sitting quietly in the corner and say, I think that guy's the next, is going to be a huge director one day. If you don't tell anybody, nobody's going to read your mind. Nobody's going to know. And the other important lesson, I think, to reiterate, is if you're the low guy on the totem pole, as you modestly said, Mike, that's a huge opportunity still. If you're a PA, one of my best years as a story person was as a logger, making no money at all. But I was on Extreme Makeover Home Edition, and I got the education of a lifetime because I kept my eyes open and my ears open. And I learned from some of the best. So if you go, and I've seen people who are like this, who are like, well, I'm just a PA, or, oh, I'm just this, or I'm just that. No, use that. That is a huge opportunity and an invaluable education and lesson that you get. So I just want to reiterate those, and thanks for that insight.
I feel like in a way I almost went to master's school because I spent 4 years at Emerson, which was fantastic. And then basically my next 4 years were on set of 70s Show. And I think I learned just as much, if not more, you know, just there and observing. And, there's certain things, you know, you do have to have some talent. You know, there are certain things you can't learn, but there's a lot that you can learn just by watching and observing and being around it and paying attention. When there's a crew that works that well together and knows their stuff, you can't help but not learn something every day. And I was afraid to ask questions. I wasn't afraid to ask, ask David questions or ask any of the department head questions. And they were happy to answer. They were, you know, they were actually happy that I was interested in doing. So, take advantage of that if you do have that opportunity. I mean, I was making no money, but I feel like, that experience was just so valuable. I wouldn't trade it. You know?
I also like how you phrased it, how you had all the confidence in the world by the fact you didn't know everything. And I think almost everybody in their 20s makes that mistake. I know I did. If you don't know anything, and don't let anybody let on that you don't know something. But quite frankly, it is so much better to just say to somebody, I don't know, as opposed to bullshitting or lying, or because then people really lose respect for you.
Right.
I also want to throw a shout out on Peace to I might say her name wrong, Nancy Lenahan, who is absolutely wonderful as the charming nuisance wife of Kurtwood Smith. She deserves. We can't just mark out for the big sci-fi guy and Kurtwood Smith, but Nancy was great. Now you did not.
I was just going to say I was just thrilled to have Nancy on that show. Her and Kurtwood worked so incredibly well together. And were just a joy to work with. They didn't have to do that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I was, I was a PA at the time, and I didn't really know Nancy. My casting director did, and that's how we were able to get her involved. But they treated me as though I was just, you know, any other director out there. They didn't treat me like I was just some kid. And they were so funny and just really had this great chemistry. and actually play a married couple on a CBS show, you know, which just shows, you know, how well they are together.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up their chemistry. It was fantastic. And that's not something you can really fake. I've heard from many an actor. But you didn't write Peace. Am I correct in saying that?
I did not write Peace, no.
But you... Okay, and then you... But you did write Legacy.
Yes.
So, yeah, tell me about that. Like, cause this is a blog about writing a bit.
I was dying to make a short. It had been, you know, being on set all day and watching... you know, I really just wanted to step into the driver's seat.
Yeah.
I was dying to make a short, and I didn't really have anything written that I was super excited about at the time. A friend of mine, who was a writer assistant on 70s Show, Jill Efron, introduced me to a friend of hers, Dan Braker, who had written a bunch of shorts and had really didn't have a desire to direct and wanted to, you know, see them made. And, you know, she told me, you know, he's a really good writer. He's looking for a director. So why don't you meet with him? And I did. And I read a few of his shorts, and this one really spoke to me. I just felt like, it didn't bring out anything personal in me, but I loved the story, and it was just really fun to play with those characters, and because it was a dark movie, but
very funny too, and charming.
But very funny and charming, and we kind of, you know. What made that movie so much fun is we kind of danced line of, you know, it, you know, dark but, you know, comedic, and you know, how dark can we go and see, and it was really fun to do, and also, you know, after I read it, I just thought, oh wow, I mean, Kurt would just be so great as Howard. So I sent him the script, you know. I mean, you know, we close from, you know, doing the show, and you know, I just kind of, you know, might have been a little bit of a a ballsy move, but you know, I just thought, hey, you know what, you don't have to do it, but if you like the script and you'd like to work on it, I'd love to have you. And he read it, he got back to me, he liked the script and wanted to work with me, and that's how it all, you know, began.
You know, it's not a coincidence that a lot of success stories in the entertainment business contain the phrase, it was a ballsy move. So definitely right. And then just a quick, for people who are listening who haven't seen the movie, one, check it out. It's so fun. But there's, it's basically about the turmoils of a man retiring. It's a very simple, but also universal theme. Like I think everybody could see their parents in there, whether they go that far or not, you know, as in the movie, I don't want to spoil it, but you did write your second short, The Legacy, which got you an enormous amount of attention. But did you actually write at Emerson, or is writing something? How long have you been screenwriting?
Yeah, I wrote and directed a film at Emerson, and it's been a hobby of mine. I mean, I don't do screenwriting professionally. I do it for fun. Mm-hmm. You know, when I have a story that, you know, sometimes stories just pop into my head and they don't leave until I write them down.
Yep.
Every once in a while I get one of those stories and I just, you know, I just love to write them. I had done a couple of those at Emerson. And I wrote a TV show that we did at the TV station, which was fun.
World famous WEIV.
It worked WEIV, that's right. If it's still around, I hope so. But Legacy, it was one of those things where I was thinking a lot about the films that I grew up on,
mm-hmm.
And thinking a lot about why did I want to be a filmmaker? And there were just certain films that influenced me as a child, and I kind of put that experience, I kind of wanted to capture the experience of watching those films that I had. And that's when the idea for Legacy came. It was written by my 11-year-old self.
Yeah.
It was kind of going back to, okay, I'm 11 years old. What movie would I want to see? What movie would I write? And that's the movie that came out.
You know, I want to kind of clarify there, because I think you hear a lot, screenwriters and other writers of all walks of life are always bombarded with the phrase, write what you know, write what you know. And that's kind of an amorphous thing. And I really like how you just said that, because I think that's what a lot of people mean when they say write what you know. Write what you want to watch as an 11-year-old kid. You know, remember that, those feelings of bliss and those feelings of joy. I think that's what some people mean, and that's a really good way to phrase that. Now, when you sit down to write a screenplay, especially now, you talked about these great experiences you had as a stage PA and as a AD, and now as a director. Did your experiences as a director influence or change or affect the way you actually write your stories? Or do you actually have two different hats? When you sit down and write, you're putting on your writer's hat, and then when you direct, you have a director's hat. How does it work for you?
It's pretty separate for me. You know, when I write, I have a tendency to write big.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of write over budget. And
so director Mike is mad at writer Mike.
I mean, it basically is. You know, The Legacy was an ambitious project with a lot of effects work and locations. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, why are you writing this? It's going to be so hard to do. But the writer in me is like, well, this is the story.
Yeah.
And you know what? The director will figure it out. But the writer, I kind of have to just say, okay, I need to write the best movie I can, and then I'll curse myself later when I've written something that's way out of budget. But I just feel like if I'm going to tell a story, I need to tell it the right way. And for whatever reason my head are not small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, we're coincidence, and it is pure coincidence that we're recording this the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con, but The Legacy got quite a lot of attention at Comic-Con a few years ago, did it not?
Yeah, back in 2010, we showed the film at the Comic-Con Film Festival there, and which was great because it was really our first chance to show it to, you know, diehard comic book fans, and you know, really see, you know, how they would react to it, because they're a very, very difficult audience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they they're very, very passionate about their stories and about characters and.
Pause. Okay, so if you guys hear an edit there, that's because this blogcast was honest to goodness interrupted by a Hollywood phone call, and I love it. It's absolutely fantastic. It's not a cliche, you guys. The phone rings at any time. But we were talking about Legacy getting over with the ever finicky comic book fans, which is also true because Legacy is and it isn't a comic book movie. And I want to say too much more of that for folks that haven't seen it, but they responded pretty well to it, you were saying.
Yeah, they responded. I mean, it kind of blew me away, the response that we got at Comic-Con. We make the movie for the audience. I mean, that's really, you know, I think what any filmmaker should really strive to do is make a film for an audience, not make a film for a studio, not make a film for anyone else, but you know, make a film for the people. And, you know, that was the first time where I actually got to keep those comic book fans who saw the film and talk about it. And it was an amazing experience. And then we got awarded by Comic-Con for the best comic book movie, which was, you know, just icing on the cake. So,
okay, see, I have to do something. Everybody on my blogcast is way too modest. He got awarded best comic book movie at Comic-Con, people. So anyway, it's excellent. You need to check it out. And I imagine in the those last minute or so, there was a pretty rousing cheer, I imagine, from the audience. Now, let's fast forward, though, to what you're doing nowadays, though. And who knows what future the legacy has, so we'll leave it there. I think that's all we could say about it. Let's talk about, though, what you're doing now. You are, again, I have to check, the producer of digital media, or digital media producer for TV Land. If anybody wants to see Mike's work, they could go to tvland.com. But what exactly is a digital media producer?
Well, it's a fairly new position. I am the digital media producer for their show Hot in Cleveland, and which is fantastic, by the way. Just being able to work with that cast and that crew, you know, I feel blessed. What a digital media producer does is I produce all of the content that goes online for the show. And a lot of that is original content, that mostly that I'm writing, which is a lot of fun too. So I get to write, shoot, produce, edit. I'm kind of my own, I'm basically my own department. But it's a new thing, I think. Shows now are starting to realize the importance of it, to have a digital media presence out there, you know, because, you know, they want to see the actors. They want to see the actors from these shows outside of the show. And that's kind of what I give them is, you know, getting the cast to do, things outside of the show for the fans, which is fun. So we do skits, you know, I do interviews with the guest cast. You know, basically, you know, anything that we feel fans would want to see. And then in turn, it promotes the show. But it's a really, really fun gig. And, I like the fact that, you know, it's creative. You know, I get to get behind the camera and I get to write and I get to work with amazing talent, you know, legends, basically, which is phenomenal. So it's been really great. And, you know, I hope more and more shows, you know, kind of see the significance of a digital producer. And I think it's only going to grow from here.
Well, it's such an interesting thing. I mean, we could do a whole other hour on this, but we're not going to. Maybe part two one day, if I'm nice to you, if I buy a beer. But we are truly on the ground floor. And I think not even just internet in terms of entertainment. I think in internet, period. I think we're learning more and more about what the internet means to our world and culture each passing day. Especially in terms of, you know, when we're recording this, the unfortunate Malaysia crash that happened in the Ukraine and now the escalating conflict, all of how that stuff is being reported is being changed by the internet, and how television is being produced is being changed by the internet. I think like 5-6 years ago, there seemed to be this perception, and this is more observational. I don't know if this is 100% accurate. There seemed to be, well, the internet's going to take over TV. And that hasn't really happened yet, but it's not exactly not there either. What do you see with the internet, where it is today, and where you think it might be going over the next 5-10 years?
Well, I think we're still in the infant stages. I think things are just going to blow up from here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to explain my position and what I do, I think just shows how
right
how on we are. Because,
but
I think in 10 years or 5 years or whatever, everyone's going to know it. I'm basically the liaison between the online fans and the show. And a lot of times I actually do live tweets with the fans and kind of see, you know, what they're thinking and, you know, give little teases here and there about the show and talk about it. But the internet as a platform, as far as actually being the medium for showing these shows, is growing more and more now. I think a few of the online only shows, like, you know, when you're talking about subscriptions like Netflix and that, I think some of them got some of the most Emmy nominations out of any of the other shows this year, and they're not even on television. So I think that's just going to grow. It's hard to say where it's headed. I think people get surprised by every turn when it comes to the internet. Who knew Twitter was going to become what Twitter is, and yeah. Facebook, and if anybody knew what was next, they'd be a billionaire.
Yeah, and if anybody tells you they know, head for the hills.
Right.
I'm glad you mentioned Twitter, though, because one of the things we've sort of learned about Twitter is that Twitter activity does not exactly equal ratings. But, and it sounds like you're using it this way, Twitter is actually a sort of immediate focus group. You can actually get live tweet, and or even whether you interact with them or not, and follow who's tweeting about your show while they're watching it. Take the information from their profiles and sort of start to form, like, okay, well, wait a second. This demographic likes this. This demographic doesn't like that. Oh, boy, people really shat on this joke or something. They really didn't like that. I mean, is that something you're seeing happening more? Is that how you're kind of using it?
Well, I mean, as far as a focus group and showing the direction of the show, like creating scripts and creating storylines, I don't know if it's really gotten there yet, but it certainly has changed the way we market shows. Seeing what's trending online, seeing what people want to click on and want to see more of, and I very much use that in the things that I create. Because I'm constantly trying to create content that, the social media friendly people will want to share. Following what they're interested in is really important. And, because it's not only about the fans of the show, but it's also about gaining new fans.
Right.
Or making people aware of our show. Which is also why, great, we have guest stars. We have some of these great, great guest stars on. And I get to talk to them about being on the show, but I also get to talk to them, about their lives and about, previous, productions they've done, which, that most people just want to know about. So it's pretty fun.
Well, of course, in the new Dan Lauria video we talked about before, we get an update on the cast of the Wonder Years.
Yeah.
Some of which I didn't actually know. And speaking of Orange and the New Black, I think Fred Savage directed a couple of those, if I'm not mistaken. He directs everything. He may be directing this. I don't even know it.
No, he directs quite a bit. Yeah. He really is. I've even AD'd for him before, and he's really good. He knows what he's doing, and he's super nice guy. It's nice to see people like that become successful, because a lot of child actors, that doesn't happen.
So. Yeah, fortunately, some of them get addicted to creativity, or make the right decisions, or just don't get caught up in many of the temptations out here. I'm not trying to sound glib about that, but unfortunately, some succumb to the wrong temptations. Right. Speaking of industry pros, though, we have to ask. Betty White is, of course, now an iconic figure in the world of entertainment and TV, and I have a sneaking suspicion the answer is yes, but is she really as cool as she seems?
No.
No?
She's not. She's cooler.
Ah. I was like, whoa, we got a headline here. I mean, she hosted Monday Night Raw not that long ago. She just...
Betty is fearless. She really is. She is... she's not afraid to do anything, to say anything, but she is the kindest person I have ever met. She really is so kind to everyone and happy all the time. Remarkable. And you can't help but, it's contagious, everyone around her. You just become happy. You just, it's like, well, she's having such a good time and is just, it makes our whole crew, everybody just smile every day, it's amazing. I've met a lot of celebrities, but, she is, probably the most famous. She's, a legend. But she doesn't, when you're working with her, it doesn't come across that way. She's just the sweet person,
And she's a pro.
Oh, completely.
You don't have that longevity unless you're just an absolute professional.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
On every level, on how she treats people, on how she, on her talent. Her talent is through the roof. On and off camera, she is one of the funniest people in the world. Her wit and her humor is second to none.
I love it.
And, she really is that person. Like, everybody thinks she is. She really is. it's amazing. And what's funny is to see, to see our guest stars and things come on the show. And they're all well-established actors. And to see them come on the show and get starstruck is pretty cool.
Wow. Well, and it reminds us all that we're all, like you said before with The Legacy, we're all that 11-year-old kid trying to make their favorite movie to some degree or another. We really all are, and it's great to see that. I think it's so easy to read the gossip pages or the tabloids and think that everybody just stabbing you in the back and cutting your throat in Hollywood, and guys, it's really, really not like that. Yes, there's an element of that, but really there's a lot of great, nice, professional, super talented people out there, including Mike Dotto, who I have to thank you so very much for, again, taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us today. Really, really great insights, which I knew you'd offer. So all the best to my fellow Emersonian, my fellow Jersey boy, and also a fellow Kings fan. Jeez, we didn't even talk about that. My second week in a row with Kings fans. Congrats. Yeah, congrats on the Stanley Cup.
Thank you. We should have won last year, though, too. It should have been three in a row. But I'll take two out of three.
Outstanding. And, I don't know. I'm not saying we're going to win again next year, but nobody's an idiot for predicting they could pull it off again next year. It's a great time to be a Kings fan.
Yes, for sure.
So, well, listen, Mike, thanks again. We want to wish you all the best with all of your endeavors and with Hot in Cleveland. Thanks again so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tim. My pleasure.
All right, cool. And really, really, again, some great reminders and insights for all of us writers out there and all of us aspiring to try to tell some good stories in the world. So over the next few weeks, I have some other interesting guests lined up, including exploring the world of research and exploring the world of podcasting. And maybe I could learn a thing or two about how to actually do this thing. But anyway, this is Handsome Timmy D, and thanks for listening to the Handsome Timmy D Express.